CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
The Grant and Danny Show is sponsored today and every day by the law firm Condori and Murad. They'll help you update your last will and testament. They'll set up a trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you, get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We are live at the Craft House in Fairfax for our Friday field trip.
This place is the best. It is packed at the moment. All sorts of different parties and festival groups coming together just to listen to your pals flap their gums about the local foosball team. It is a blast. Great food. The thunder snow has moved on. There's sun shining outside. It's in a different location now, so it's beautiful. You could probably sit outside, maybe make a snowball or two while eating some delicious appies.
Yeah, they'll fire up the heaters for you. But if you're not a crazy person, you could just come inside and sit in the warmth and enjoy yourself. But it's been great to catch up with listeners of all ages who have been watching this team for many, many years, who are giddy this season. You know, people telling me they've been fans for 30, 40, 50 years. I had a guy sitting here earlier today who showed me a picture of him and his dad at RFK Stadium before the final game the Redskins played at RFK back in the mid-90s, hoping they go back to D.C. So it's been a really, really enjoyable day with our listening audience. Let's get to the Beltway Blitz. We'll cover the NFL ahead of a weekend of games, and the Commanders will start on the ice, though. Mike Vogel, washcaps.com, covers the Capitals, who lost in a shootout last night, 4-3 to the Minnesota Wild. That was their first shootout of the season, believe it or not. I thought the Caps played pretty well, Mike. Just didn't finish the game, and Minnesota kept coming late. What'd you think of getting one out of those 2 points at home?
Yeah, I agree with you, Grant. I thought that was probably, of the four games that they played since coming out of the holiday break, that was arguably the best 60 minutes that they played, but it's one of the two games that they weren't able to win during that stretch. You know, a couple of times they had the lead. I thought it was a little bit criminal that they came out of the first period down a goal, because I thought the first period was their best period. Second was okay too, but yeah, the third, the biggest problems were the shorthanded goal, obviously, in the last minute of the first that they gave up that put them down a goal. But you know, they battled back and get Ovi's power play goal. That's a crucial moment of the game to cash in on the double minor there. And then when you get the Marty Fervari goal, you're thinking, man, this is a great story. This guy has been bleeding for this team for the last 2 weeks, pretty much every night. And for him to get the go-ahead goal in the third period, his first goal of the season, what a great story. And then, of course, the tying goal and the shootout comes right after that. It's unfortunate, but, you know, you look at the bright side, they did get a point. For me, the bright side was it took half a season to get to the shootout. I'm not a big fan. I think that was the deepest they've ever gone into the season without having a shootout. But now, you know, they turn their attention to the homestand finale and the Rangers tomorrow, and a couple more home games this week. They got some home cooking ahead of them, which I think should benefit them. They've if I'm not mistaken, I think they're 4-0-2 in their last six at home right now.
So, folks, you mentioned that shorthanded goal, and I love Charlie Lindgren just as much as the next man, and he's having a nice season in terms of saving the puck, but to me, he's lost his playing the puck privileges. That's a couple times now over the span of a few weeks, I forget who the first one to, where he just literally swept it into his own net, but last night that shorthanded goal was very avoidable. That wasn't some odd man rush or a breakdown. That was just a bad play by Lindgren, and I'm sure he feels terrible about it, but I'd have to change some procedures there if I'm Coach Carbs and everybody that's in charge. I just have to do something different. I can't let him be as aggressive and comfortable as he wants to be until further notice.
Yeah, Danny, that's a tough one to give up, especially, you know, last minute of the period, all that. Just circumstantially, it's a brutal time for a mistake like that. And you're right, he I'm sure felt bad about it. And the gaffe that you're referring to, the other one was I think it was November 26th. It was in Tampa. It was the night before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there you go.
But both games, I give him credit. He didn't that game in Tampa. They actually wound up winning that game, and he did that. I want to say it was midway through the third period. It was the go ahead goal at that point. So they managed to come back and win that one. Yeah, I mean, you can't just unfortunately, you can't just rein in a goalie's puck playing privileges. You kind of need him back there to set the table and to make the right plays at the right times, which obviously Charlie didn't do last night. You know, and that's the thing. Not every goalie in the league has the puck playing skills of a Braden Holtby. Or even the guy that we saw in Detroit over the weekend, Alex Lyon, I thought was really good in that game. The only game the Caps did not pull points in over the last week. But you know, I think typically, I don't think either Logan Thompson or Charlie Lindgren are among the top puck playing goaltenders in the NHL. But they typically do a good enough job. And again, it's sort of like. Sort of like a good defenseman. All you want is to not get noticed when you do that. When you go out and play the puck, you just want it to be a clean touch. Do what you need to do and get back in the crease. And obviously that was the furthest thing from what happened last night.
46 games remain for the Capitals. Last night was game 38. Alex Ovechkin has 18 goals. He's played just 22 games. Vogues at 39 years old. He's scoring at the fastest, best rate he ever has in his illustrious career. First of all, he's only 23 away from Gretzky. How much of a chance do you give him to get there?
I mean, I think he's got a real legitimate chance of getting there before the end of the season. I think if he doesn't miss too much time or doesn't miss any more time, I think he's got a realistic chance. And I think, you know, if the team can get rolling a little bit, I think that's going to help him, because I think that's actually what's at the root of his him playing so well this year, scoring so many goals. If you think about the beginning of last season, the whole team was scuffling to score, so it was easy to just for the opposing teams to sort of key on him and let whomever else might be able to find a puck to the back of the net, go ahead and knock yourselves out. This year they've had such a, I think they're one of only two teams in the league right now that's sitting with 4-15 goal scorers. It's them and the Tampa Bay Lightning. So when you've got a few other weapons that other teams have to pay attention to, it gives the greatest goal scorer of all time a little more time, a little more space, maybe some better opportunities. And I think he still hasn't even, to me, hasn't looked like he did before the injury in coming back. It's only been four games. It's going to take, I think, a little bit of time. But I just think that the way this team plays and the opportunities he gets and the way the power play is going right now, 23 goals in 46 games is absolutely doable for him.
Folks, thank you as always.
Thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me. Have a good weekend.
You too, buddy. Have a good weekend, folks. Let's hit that NFL sounder, Darius. Our pal Mike Jones, who writes for The Athletic, to keep the all-Mike train on the tracks this point in the Beltway Blitz. What do you make, Jonesy, of Sean McVay not playing anybody that's ever played for the Rams pretty much this weekend? He's giving everyone time off. I actually don't mind the decision, but I know he's catching a little bit of flack.
Yeah, look, I mean, I understand there's two schools of thought. You don't want your team that's got some momentum to all of a sudden lose that momentum, going into the playoffs. But at the same time, you got to take care of these guys' bodies, and you don't want somebody getting a needless injury or banged up or be, less than 100% next week in the playoffs. So I understand Sean's thinking. And look, remember, this is the same guy who hardly plays his guys in the preseason because he feels like they can get the work they need in practice and he doesn't want to risk it in a meaningless game.
Mike Jones of The Athletic on Grant and Danny. Two games tomorrow. Early slate, 4:30, you got the Browns and the Ravens, and then an 8 East time game for the Bengals and the Steelers. I don't know how much really is on the line in that early game. You can tell me if you think Baltimore is going to be gunning for seeding or anything else, but Bengals-Steelers should be fascinating. Pittsburgh does not want to go into the playoffs ice cold. That's a team that has lost three straight down the stretch. and the Bengals are fighting for their lives.
Yeah, you're exactly right. This is going to feel like a playoff game already, you know, this week, because if the Bengals, they have to win, and then they need some help to make it in. Like you said, the Steelers have not looked great. They need to shore up these areas that have been plaguing them in these losses. So it's going to be, I think, a physical every time it's in an AFC North matchup. You know, it's a knockdown, drag out. But I think that you're going to see a lot of intensity, a lot of physicality, you know, out of Pittsburgh, definitely. And then, look, the real question is which Bengals defense is going to show up, the one that was getting torched in the second half of the season from the midway point on, or the team that's really kind of tightened things up the last couple weeks and given better support to Joe Burrow.
So you mentioned we're talking about Cincinnati and Burrow here. If I'm Kansas City, I don't know, I wouldn't think I would say this out loud, but I'd be – that's the only – a team and player really that would terrify me, right? So I get the sense that they're not too concerned if they lose to Denver tomorrow or this weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why I don't think that they're going with their stars. But the thing is this is the great thing for Cincinnati is that they have Joe Burrow. But the only problem is because of the way their defense is, it puts so much pressure on them. They've got to score so many points. It's kind of how Kansas City used to be. But now they can lean on their defense, and their defense really keeps them in games when their offense isn't clicking right there. So, yeah, I think that, you know, a healthy Joe Burrow and that offense clicking is maybe a little bit, you know, give you some uneasiness in the playoffs. But the fact that their defense has struggled to stop people also kind of, you know, makes you feel like, okay, well, we got a chance. We're just going to have to exchange punches.
The Lions and the Vikings are going to play in game 272 to end the season on Sunday Night Football. It's the most wins between two teams playing in the regular season ever, 28. It's the first time two 14-win teams are going to play. Division title on the line. Who do you like?
I really am kind of almost feeling that Minnesota might get this one. Now, I know they're playing on the road. They had a chance in the last game and just came up short here. Second time around, now Sam Darnold is even playing with even more confidence. I don't know, you know, the last couple weeks, you've just seen him take it to another level with some of these throws. He's not just making easy throws. He's fitting the ball into some tight windows. They're asking him to make big boy plays. And, you know, the way that their defense is playing now, they have familiarity. I think they could win this thing, but I think it will come down to ball security, you know, who manages to wind up taking care of the football, you know, and if that team that does that will probably wind up winning this thing. But it's going to be close, I think.
Mike, thank you as always, buddy. Have a great weekend.
All right, see you guys.
We'll see you, man. Hit that local 53 sounder, Darius. We're in our pal Chick Hernandez to discuss the local 53. Chick, how seriously do you think they're going to take this one? Is it one of those preseason-type situations where guys will start, play a little bit, and then maybe rest in the second half? Or is this pedal to the metal here for Washington?
This is Dan Quinn at his best. There will be no taking it lightly. This is get that sixth seed, go in with momentum. Both the OC and the DC talked about it yesterday. We're not going to come into this thing lightly. So I expect them to come out. And he's setting the tone as he has all season long, set the tone for the playoffs with a win over Dallas in Big D.
Along those lines, though, Chick, I'm curious. Do you think if they were to jump out and be up like 21-7 at the half or something, is there a second half situation where they start to take their foot off the gas? Or do you think they air it, you know, go 60 minutes like they got to win the thing?
I think, Grant, if they're up 21-7, nothing changes. I think if there's a large lead in the fourth quarter, then Marcus Mariota comes in at quarterback. That's what I see happening. Because I don't think, you know, Jaden's that guy who wants to play. If anybody watched the video that was put out by NFL Films, the 14 minutes, you saw him up close and personal, what a kind of kid or young man he is. I don't think they take the foot off. That's the way they've been built all season long, is to just go. And I don't see him making those moves. Obviously, there's some, you know, players that won't be playing because of injury and all that. But I don't think they step off, because you got to come into that first playoff game with some major confidence.
Chick, we were talking about this earlier. Jaden Daniels, who we're obviously talking a lot about, has been so sensational here over these last, really the Tennessee game, everybody was. They destroyed them. But these other three games here during this four-game winning streak, kind of Daniels has masked a lot of inefficiencies, right? It's like, you know, for me as a pudgy guy, like wearing those vertical stripes, and it's also all black somehow, and, you know, there's good lighting. I mean, he's fixing a lot of ills. What non-Jaden Daniels division are you concerned about heading into a postseason run?
I'm not concerned at all. I'm really not. And that's hard to say about a rookie, but, and you know, look, rookies are rookies for a reason, right? It's their first year. What happens in the playoffs? I mean, obviously a lot of guys get affected by the bright lights in a big game. That's just not the way that he's been playing all season long. When he got injured, mechanics changed, and to their credit, Cliff Kingsbury kind of changed the way he called an offense as well. I think it's all systems go, and I don't – there's nothing that the young man can't do. And if you listen to his opponents when he's mic'd up, I mean, in mid-game, they're talking to him like, dude, bro, you're making some plays. You're the future kind of thing. There's nothing to look at and go, you know, I know a lot of folks said, oh, I wish he would gain weight or be bigger. Well, he's not. He's just not. And he hasn't even put it in 10th gear yet when it comes to running. You know, there are moments where he kind of glides. The sky is the limit, as they say, and I can't wait to see. I really can't wait to see what's happening in the next couple of weeks, and I can't wait to see what's happening in the next decade, to be honest with you.
The ceiling is the roof, I believe they also say. Chick Hernandez is with us on Grant and Danny. There's two areas where we started the show that they've got to still clean up if they're going to win a playoff game. They have not run the ball well outside of Daniels in the traditional running game. 3.1 a pop over three games by running backs. And then they got a corner issue covering wide receivers with Marshawn Lattimore still banged up. Give me a thought on both of those two things. But also, do you think Lattimore is in line to play next week, or is that still very much up in the air?
I think it's up in the air. I mean, I think they're going to do everything in their power to get him. That's why he's not playing this week. I think it's in they're trying everything they can to get him ready for the playoff game. Look, they played a major portion. Well, he's only played 2-3 games. So they've done it without him before. But they are definitely, I'm going to call it woeful right now. Watching Michael Davis was painful last week. I'll tell you right now. You and I were in the press box. It was not pretty to watch that guy move around. And BSJ has had his issues as well. But you have to play with what you have. And Joe Witt will figure out a way, I think, to mitigate the damage, as it were. So I think they're certainly trying to get him ready for the first playoff game. And the run game, look, Tyler Biotis is a stud. And Michael Dieter is his backup. That's what it is. And without Tyler in there making proper calls and confident calls, they have certainly had an issue in the run game. You get Austin Ekeler back, which I think he's, you know, got a good chance of being active. And then you got that 1-2 punch of him and B-Rob. And I just know that without having Tyler in there, that is an issue. And they've got to figure around it. And I don't know if they do when it comes to the run game. But your quarterback ran for 127 last week, and that's how they're kind of fixing that.
Chick, great as always, buddy. Appreciate it. Have an awesome weekend.
All right, boys. Take it easy.
Go get him, Chick. That is Chick Hernandez. We are Grant and Danny. Your Beltway Blitz is in the books. How do we see Sunday's games playing out? There's still a lot on the line. We don't know who Washington's going to play yet. A Rams win or loss matters. Whether the Bucs win or lose or the Falcons win or lose could all influence Washington. We will give you our predictions on those games and what is going to happen for the Commanders as it pertains to a playoff matchup. We'll do that next live from Fairfax Corner and Craft House in Fairfax on Grant and Danny on the Fan. What a scene at the Craft House in Fairfax. It is hopping in here on a winter Friday, January 3rd, 2025. Our first Friday field trip of the new year, a banger. Appreciate everybody who's come out and made this show fun today at Fairfax Corner. We're going to be here for another hour or so stop through on your way home off 66 if you want to try to beat the clock and get in here and hang out with the program. It's Grant and Danny live in Fairfax Corner at Craft House. Next week, ahead of the playoff game, we're going to be in Arlington. We'll give you the deets starting on Monday as to where our playoff pep rally is going to be next Friday. But, Danny, I want to go through some of the games that matter the most to the Commanders this weekend and just go around the league here and give some thoughts on how we think these games are going to play out. So why don't we start with the 1 o'clock game that matters the most to Washington, and that is the Tampa Bay Bucs. They play at home, Raymond James Stadium, at 1 o'clock. The fact that they're home going into a potential home game next week is notable and interesting. It's not like they're traveling cross-country and coming back early in the week before a playoff game. 9-7, Tampa has a chance to get a win, clinch the NFC South at 10-7. They play the lowly 5-11 Saints. The Saints gave them a run for their money in the first game between the two teams, which was a shootout. This is a very, very different New Orleans team. The line in this game is pretty massive.
14.5. This is Alabama of September against a directional Alabama.
It opened initially, and this was in the look-ahead line at one point, at 2.5 points. But obviously both teams have gone in different directions now. New Orleans has all but shut it down for the season. Draft positioning on the line for them. The Bucs are going to win this game, barring something crazy happening, which would mean, with a little bit of help, they can get to the 3 seed and host Washington.
Yeah, to me, I think Tampa rolls in this one. I mean, 14.5 is just such a massive spread if you're a betting-type individual. But just in general, I think it's kind of acknowledging, yeah, New Orleans, Derek Carr is officially not going to play. He's been ruled out. Not that that was too much of a surprise, but still, it's now official that it's happening. Well, Spencer Rattler will start for New Orleans. They don't have much to go on. And Tampa Bay is, you know, despite a couple of hiccups and some bad losses in their own right, a team that's, you know, in general, played pretty darn well, punched above their weight class a little bit, with Baker Mayfield having a career year, Mike Evans cementing his legacy as one of the great receivers of all time. The emergence of Bucky Irving has been, sublime for them.
1,000-yard season for little Bucky.
As a part-timer for half the year, by the way. As basically the third down back for, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks before he kind of took over the lead back role.
Not only do they want to climb in the standings to get out of a matchup with the Vikings or the Lions, they're doing it the opposite of the Rams, though. And they have not won their division. I mean, so frankly, like, a loss means they're out of the playoffs if Atlanta handles its business against the Panthers.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a different algorithm for them. But they're going to be coming with everything they got. They also, you mentioned Mike Evans, need to get him 85 receiving yards. I think one of the great props you're going to find is Mike Evans over 70, 80 yards on an alt line, because Mike Evans is trying to get to 1,000 for what will be a streak that goes all the way back to his rookie year in 2014, an 11th straight season. No receiver's ever done that. I think they're going to do everything they can to get him to that 1,000-yard mark. But they're going to win going away. So we'll leave the Bucs to the side for a moment. Then we get to the Rams. We've talked a lot about L.A. They're sitting Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua, Matthew Stafford, Kyren Williams, their entire outfit in operation offensively, some of their starting linemen as well. If they win, they get to 10-7. If they lose, they'll be a 11-6. If they lose, they'll be a 10-7 division champion. Won't matter. They've got the tiebreaker over Seattle. They're already in. So for them, it's just a matter of, do you want to be the 3 seed, host Washington, or the 4 seed, host Minnesota, Detroit? And by sitting everyone, they're saying they don't care. I actually think they lose to Seattle. The betting line in this game is now up to the Seahawks -6.5. Now, I don't think that makes sense. I would take the Rams in points. I think it'll be close. Having said that, I still like Seattle to beat the Jimmy Garoppolo-led L.A.
So what I haven't seen is what Seattle's going to do, right? Because they're eliminated. I don't know if that's, you know, backup Billy for them, too. And it's just going to be one of those completely meaningless late-season games. Or if they're going, no, we'd like to win and get, you know, X number of guys to their contract incentives or what the heck ever. But, yeah, I mean, but the Rams announcing we're going to sit everybody, that's a 10-plus point swing in the betting line. Rams open as 5.5-point favorites over Seattle. But now that no Williams, no Nacua, no Stafford, no Kupp, nobody of note is playing, it's now swung in the opposite direction. So that's a tough one to anticipate, honestly.
How about this? If Geno Smith throws for 185 yards, he will make $2 million in contract incentives.
Same. That's so pretty neat.
I'm just saying. I have not seen the injury report to see his health or what it looks like for him on the report going into the final week of the season. So we both then, it sounds like we're in agreement, we both think Seahawks will beat Rams.
I do think the Seahawks do. Assuming they're, you know, they're not doing the exact same dance that the Rams are, I don't think they are, though.
That means we're betting on Washington to play Tampa Bay, not L.A.
That's what we're talking about.
Wow.
Yeah.
Back where their whole season began, that would be fascinating. Now, if the Bucs stumble, all of a sudden the Falcons game becomes important. 8-8 Atlanta hosting 4-12 Carolina. A Falcons win to get to 9-8, and they would be a division champion over the Bucs with the tiebreaker. That's if the Saints could somehow stun Tampa Bay.
Yeah, so in this one, Carolina has been game for a little while, right? It's a tale of almost three seasons for them, where they started off just so inept. Bryce Young just simply couldn't do it. You have that kind of middle portion where they began to be more competitive, not good. Now the return of Bryce Young, hey, they got something going. They got exposed last week, just got destroyed. This is who they are. They're picking top 10 again, or they'll finish the, you know, in the top part of the draft for a reason. And, you know, Atlanta still has something to play for as Michael Penix tries to establish himself. 7.5-point favorites. Atlanta is open at 6.5. It's kind of held steady and fast there. I expect Atlanta to win that game.
The Panthers without Chuba Hubbard are just a different team out for the season now. When he was running hard and a catalyst and a bell cow for them.
He can play.
Setting everything up for them offensively with 20-plus carries a game. They're just a much tougher out. Without him, I think you saw last week, to your point, it's just a different thing. Bijan Robinson's been running hard, running well, running a lot. He has had 17 or more carries in five straight games. In fact, 22 or more in four of the last five. He's run for 102, 92, 125, 94, and 90 during that time with six touchdowns over those five contests as he comes down the stretch for the Atlanta Falcons. Other important football. We told you the Bengals play the Steelers 8 East time tomorrow night. Joe Burrow led Cincinnati. Burrow leading the NFL in passing yards and touchdowns with a chance to become the fifth quarterback to ever throw for 4,500 yards, 5,000 yards and 45 touchdowns. He's got a chance to cement that against Pittsburgh. They still need help, though. The Bengals need to beat the Steelers. It would be a fourth straight loss for Pittsburgh. They'd make the playoffs anyway. And then on Sunday, they would need losses from the Miami Dolphins at 425 against the Jets and the Denver Broncos in their game against the Kansas City Chiefs at 425 in Denver. Now, if you say, oh, well, Kansas City's definitely beating Denver. Kansas City's sitting Patrick Mahomes and many of their starters.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz is going to get the nod for Kansas City.
So, yeah, just thinking about that, Cincinnati left themselves, you know, too big a hole to climb out of, and they're dangerous. I mean, especially,
still a very slim chance
there,
for them.
There is a slim chance. They handle their business against a reeling Pittsburgh Steelers team, and you get some help. You're counting on the Jets to do something well for you. That's not a great place to be for anybody. And then counting on Kansas City's backups to be able to beat a team that's still hungry to solidify their own postseason position in Denver. So, yeah, it's a slim chance, certainly. But, yeah, Cincinnati will control some of their destiny there on Saturday night. They could do their part by beating Pittsburgh and then sort of play the wait-and-see game.
I don't even guarantee a Bengals win as 2.5-point favorites. I'm normally all over Tomlin as an underdog at home. I mean, if Mike Tomlin's catching points in Pittsburgh, you take him and you go to the well with it. So I'm probably going to play that as it is. But if the Bengals do win, I just don't see either of the things they need happening. I think there's a good chance the Jets could beat the Dolphins at home because Miami won't have Tua. In that game, you're going to be starting Tyler Huntley again for a second straight contest, although he played well last week.
Jets are favored.
Jets are favored because of the lack of Tua. I think it's like a one-point spread. It's basically a pick 'em. The game that I just cannot see happening the way that Bengals need is Chiefs-Broncos. Granted, Kansas City's 15-1, and they always find a way. But they find a way with Patrick Mahomes, who's a little bit of a one-man band. If Carson Wentz led Kansas City, beats Denver, it means they turn the ball over a few times. Bo Nix looked like a rookie. I just think they got the playoffs right there in their grasp against backups. It's hard for me to not think they win that game.
In Denver as well.
They're 10.5-point favorites?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Again, you've seen a number of these wild swings in betting lines this week. Understandable, as teams announce we're playing guys, not playing guys, we're starting them, not starting them,
whatever. Yeah, but give me Kansas City in points.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a big number. It's not a vote of confidence in Carson Wentz, I'll say that.
But that's a Super Bowl program. They win every single week. This sounds stupid, but they know how to win. Like, they just find ways. And, yes, it's mostly Mahomes, but you mean to tell me they're just going to roll over and get blown out? I can't see that.
I can, but I understand your point in general. Like, to me, I think this is a we don't want to show a single tendency, a single thing. Health is the priority. Let's get the hell out of here because we already know who we are. We've flipped the switch and played better as the season has progressed like a champion. We're going to the AFC title game. We're not giving anybody anything. So I guess I could see it. In general, your philosophy is right. I'm with you. They've done this all year where they haven't been great and yet are, whatever it is, 15-1 heading into this one.
They don't seem to do like the we'll shut it down and not show you anything thing very well or at all.
Yeah,
like
right.
Andy Reid plays Patrick Mahomes in every preseason game.
Yeah.
You know, late year, they're running trick plays. I don't know. We'll see. But I don't think they beat Denver. I just feel like 10.5 is way
too
big
one.
A spread. All right, next, let's go with some props, over-unders from FanDuel for the Commanders game against the Cowboys. How do we see the game playing out? The top of the hour at 5, we'll scout the opponent with Calvin Watkins, who covers Dallas in Texas. We are live in Fairfax today. Fairfax Corners, awesome craft house. It's a beautiful location. Come on by and kick it with us on G&D. It is a football Friday ahead of a Week 18 clash between the Commanders and Cowboys. Now, this is a weird Dallas week. Doesn't really have a whole lot of juice to it because Dallas stinks so bad and Washington has bigger fish to fry. Respectfully to the Cowboys, we don't have time for your nonsense. We are on to bigger and better things. We are on to the next. It's playoff time in D.C. But having said that, it's the Cowboys, so there's going to be a little energy. We had someone walking around with a Cowboys helmet with, like, basically a sword stabbed
through. Yeah, it was like most of a spear, but then the tip of this, like, the handle of the spear got broken off.
I've
pretty
got
good.
I think there was, like, a Dallas Suck shirt over here as
there
well.
There is a Dallas Suck shirt, yeah.
So we got good vibes.
It's because they suck, and that's why you wear it.
Yeah, people are making sure it's known that Dallas is not any good, which we're on board with ahead of this final regular season game of the season. The Commanders have already won 11 games for the first time since 1991.
91.
And they have a chance at 12 wins. Kicking it like a Super Bowl campaign. Absolutely amazing. Let's bring in our producer back in our D.C. studios, Darius Dameron.
I love you, Dad.
He's got some props for us ahead of this weekend's matchup. We'll see how we think Washington Stars are going to perform.
What's up, guys? We miss you here in not snowy D.C. Let's start with the passers. Jaden Daniels, they got his passing prop set at 214.5.
I like the over here. I think the kind of dirty little secret is Washington can't run the ball, and they won't be able to run it. They're going to have to sling it and throw it around a little bit. And Jaden Daniels goes over. I think he ends up with 225 or 230 yards, give or take. But I think there's some chunk yardage here to be had through the air. I think he gets it.
So when you said that total, I thought I was going to go under. It feels like a lot. Having said that, he's gone over pretty easily in 3 straight and in 4 of 5. His passing totals in those games, 275, 226, 258, and 227. I think he goes over that right around 220, which feels kind of like his average-ish on the season. I don't, you know, it's not going to be a huge game. It's not going to be a 300-yard game, but he'll go for 220. There's going to be room to throw the football. You saw Kenny Pickett make plays down the field last week. You saw Tanner McKee come in for Philly, whoever that guy was, and throw 2 touchdowns deep down the field as well. Dallas's secondary is leaking a little oil at this point. We'll go over.
The opposing quarterback is set to be, possibly set to be Cooper Rush. They currently have his prop set at 191.5.
Over. I think Dallas is going to lose. I think Dallas is going to be chasing the game for much of the day, so that will make them more one-dimensional than they already want to be. I know they don't have CeeDee Lamb, but Cooper Rush will go over that total. It's also a very, very low total. Now, here is my one concern, and it's why I'm actually not playing this prop.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to answer Darius for the sake of the segment. It's very possible they play him for the first half of the game, they sit him, and then they play Trey Lance. The guy would bet on seeing Trey Lance at some point, which is why this prop is so low. But just to answer the question, we're discussing how we think the game will play out. I think the Cowboys will throw for over 200 yards, so I'll say over.
Yeah, that's why I've got the under. You just said the reason. I don't think he plays the whole game. I think this, regardless of what's happening, I think we see Trey Lance for a lot of it. They'll give Cooper Rush maybe a couple possessions, maybe a half, whatever. But we will see Trey Lance, and that's why Rush goes under. Not because it's a gaudy passing total, but I think he'll have a chance to do it.
On to the rushing props. Jaden Daniels' rushing prop is set at 47.5.
Over. I've been going under on this an awful lot, especially middle of the season, because teams are trying to take it away. I think now we're sort of realizing this is the offense. Jaden Daniels, put your cape on and do something special. I don't think they'll be able to run the ball conventionally. I think that part of their game and their offense right now is kind of broken. And I think it's up to Daniels to provide those rushing yards. I think he will on some scrambles. He will on a couple design things. I think he goes over. He'll be in the 60s for the game.
Yeah, he's been over in 4 out of 5. So those of us that have been over most of the season are now in the green for the campaign at this point if you're rolling cash over. He's had long runs, by the way. In the last 4-5 games, he's had runs of 23, 24, 29, and 25. He's starting to rip off bigger gains. That's how he's gotten to the over in 4 of 5, with rushing totals of 74, 66, 81, 127. I think they'll run the ball better with B-Rob in the backs against Dallas. They'll go back to the drawing board after not having been able to a couple weeks ago. There's also just that end of the season. Like, stopping the run is a want-to thing. You're giving up your body. You're dealing with the pain. It's physical. It's taxing. How bad do you really need this one if you're a run stuffer for Dallas? You got 1 foot out the door for your vacation. Golf clubs are packed. So I got him going over. I think the Commanders run the ball well with backs, with Jaden Daniels. He'll be at 55 or 60 rushing yards in the game.
The running back for the Commanders, Brian Robinson, they have his total set at 56.5.
I'll go over. He's not going to be running wild. This is not a field day where he goes for 100 for the fourth time this season. But even in games where he hasn't run great, like, we don't think he ran all that well against Atlanta, top of mind. He ran for 60. The Saints game, he had a terrible game. Ran 21 times for 65 yards. He's been over in 2 of the last 3, 3 of the last 4. And if you go all the way back to, like, before Halloween, he's been over in 5 of the 7 games he's played in. It's a low total, so I'll go over. He's going to get carries.
Just under. He'll get the volume, but their run game is broken. I don't think it works anymore. And I think the word is out how to defend it, and they're going to make this team do something else on offense. And I think they will. I think they win this game. Just my little spoiler alert here. But I don't think they can hand it to Brian Robinson and run it. I think Rodriguez gets more. I think you'll see more McNichols. But I don't think Robinson gets north of that 50-plus yard total.
Will the Commanders be able to contain Rico Dowdell? He's set at 67.5 rushing yards.
I'm going to say I had it right around there. I'm going to say a slight over on that. I think there'll be a couple rip-off runs. I think in general they'll do an okay job at stopping the run, especially in the second half of this game where they'll finally fully commit to it, where they don't have to worry about passing attack against them when we see Trey Lance. But I think Dowdle goes slightly over that total, right around 70 yards.
I'll say over as well. He ran for 104 against the Eagles this past week and 150 against the Panthers a couple of weeks ago. They have really committed to him. They've kind of rode him down the stretch. I think when Lance comes in, even though you think they might just stack the box, he's actually maybe harder to defend at that point because Lance is keeping on read option stuff, making you defend him. Maybe he hits a 15, 20-yarder, he creases at the end of the game with Lance in there.
Wide receiver 1 for the Washington Commanders is Terry McLaurin. They have him set at 60.5, looking to bounce back after being shut down by A.J. Terrell last week.
I want to go over. It should be over. It probably will be over. I'll say under, though, just because Terry's a guy that I think, as physical as he is and as willing to take on contact as he is, this is one of those games where, as the game goes on, you may need to protect him from himself a little bit. Like, I'd love to see him have a big half. Get your lead, get up 20-7, 20-3, and then throttle it down a little bit. I could see him having like 4 for 50 in the first half and then maybe like 1 more catch for 7 after that or something like that because they pull starters as they're up big in the fourth quarter. So I'll go slight under, getting him ramped up for the playoffs.
I've got an over here. I think we're going to quickly realize that this is what the offense needs. To get that lead, you need Terry McLaurin to do it. They're going to move him around. You'll get a few different looks. He'll have one deep shot, I think, that they connect on. I think he goes over. He'll finish 6 for about 77 and a tutty. Get to that 13th touchdown plateau.
Cliff Kingsbury calls him Oz. Everybody else calls him OZ. Olamide Zaccheaus set at 39.5.
Over. They don't have other options. This is their number two receiver, such as it is, right? He's going to get looks. He's going to get targets. He's going to catch a couple Buble screens, a couple tunnels. He'll work that kind of middle of the field, a couple option routes there. Opposite Zach Ertz, I think he goes over.
Yeah, he's a good number two for them, too. They don't need anybody else. He's been great. 70 yards and 2 touchdowns 2 weeks ago, 85 yards and a touchdown with 1 coming off the board. Would have been 90-2 last week. Cliff Kingsbury continues to draw things up, make it work with this weaponry. They have not wanted for more talent at the receiver position here of late. As funny as it is with Zaccheaus, who's a journeyman, with De'Ami Brown now hurt and basically turning things over to the ghost of Jamison Crowder and Alamide Zaccheaus. I'll say over as well, heavily involved, bubbles, smokes, throwing him the ball early, a lot of slants. You'll see Zaccheaus getting early targets.
Last receiving prop, Zach Ertz has a bunch of bonuses on the line this weekend. 41.5 receiving yards for Zach Ertz.
Over again on that one. Now, I think in general that's kind of right where he normally will be in this offense, is that, you know, 25 to 40 yard range, catching 5 or 6 balls underneath, working that way. I think this is one of those you endear yourself to the locker room kind of things if you're this coaching staff, where you know what Zach Ertz means. You know you went to him in crunch time last week to catch that game-winning touchdown. That's your third down war daddy. It's not a lot of yards after the catch, but that doesn't matter. They're going to get him a bunch of looks. I think they'll be working to get him his catches and targets and things. It's like a guy that, you know, needs another bucket for a triple-double or something like that. The whole offense is going to run through him. He's going to get targets.
Yeah, with a big day in catches, he could make another 250,000. With 90 more yards, he could make another 250,000. With 2 touchdowns, he could make 250,000. So I think the volume will be there. You know, Jaden's going to know that going into the game. I would imagine that, you know, if he has a big enough day, it could be 750 more thousand in incentives for one of the leaders on the team and well-liked guys in the locker room, Zach Ertz. So there you go, some props for you for the game coming up against the Dallas Cowboys. Speaking of Dallas, let's scout the opponent. We'll talk to one of their beat reporters next, live from Fairfax Corner and Kraft House. You're listening to Grant and Danny on the Fan.